House Committee on Government Efficiency to order Tuesday, April 17th, and I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2906. Matt, if you would, please remind us what this is about.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2906 authorizes state agencies to enter into agreements with American Indian tribes or agencies of American Indian tribes, regardless of limitation in law on state agencies' authority to enter into contracts or on terms of contract.
Okay, thank you. Ted, did you have anything that you wanted to add or let the committee know? Okay. Does anybody have any questions about House Bill 2906? You have questions?
No, I don't.
Do you have any statements you want to make?
I think we ought to move the desk, please, and get on with our business.
Okay.
There's no
amendments.
Oh, cool.
No amendments. Okay, so, Representative Cruz.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2906 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Cruz moves House Bill 2906 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Clerk, call the roll, please. Excuse.
Aye.
Representative Garrard.
Aye.
Representative Hill.
Aye.
Representative Latore.
Excuse.
Aye.
Representative March.
Aye. Although I did, I thought we were coming back with amendments. So.
I was. Go ahead and finish the roll, and then I'll
wait. We are.
Aye. Representative Worth.
Aye.
Chair.
Aye. House Bill 2906, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The reason why we didn't do the amendments is because we were informed that we didn't need to do the amendments.
Okay.
Everything was fine just the way it was, and that all of the players had decided that
I apologize for not bringing that up in comment.
No problem. Let's see. Representative Cruz, would you like to move this for a consent calendar?
No.
Okay. We're at Representative Cruz. Would you like to carry it?
Sure.
Okay. Representative Cruz will carry the bill. Okay. Great. Thank you. Let's see. Do we have Representative Cruz? There he is right there. Okay. I will close the work session on House Bill 2906, and I'm going to open a public hearing on the HJR 43. Representative Morissette is here and going to enlighten us about HJR 43. Representative, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I have before you HJR, which proposes performance-based budgeting. And you may ask, don't we already have performance-based budgeting? I'm hoping that someone from DAS is going to be here. We talked to Teresa McCune.
Somebody is here.
Okay, they will answer questions if you have questions about whether or not we do have performance-based budgeting. This is a carryover from last session, and I didn't get a hearing on the bill, but the chair at that time did not like the bill. I talked to all of the members of the committee who said they would pass it out, but she chose not to. She was on the audit committee, and I think that she felt this would be a little bit much for an agency to deal with. We did amend the bill as originally proposed to do a pilot project with three agencies that would kind of fit a pilot project in the sense that they were almost there. Some agencies do a pretty good job in coming up with performance measures. Others don't. And so it's not necessarily an easy task. But my feeling is I think that our constituents expect us to do this sort of budgeting. It's an expectation, and we kind of pay lip service to it. So I would urge that we do adopt this, and I urge that we ask the agencies to select three agencies that would fit the criteria and that we do this as a pilot project. I did give you a cover letter that answers some questions. How does this resolution define performance measures? Performance measures are quantifiable outcomes that support the goals of an agency. Outcomes reflect effectiveness and results. This resolution prohibits substituting activities for outcomes. Some examples of outcome performance measures are, and there are a number of points made under this. I gave you a larger handout that talks about the state of Florida and performance-based budgeting, and I apologize for not getting this to you sooner because this is something that perhaps you would like to take some time to look at and then come back and have another hearing, because it is, you know, it's something that if at first blush it's difficult, I guess, to comprehend all of the consequences, intended and unintended, of something like this. So I present this to you this morning in hopes that you will give it some serious consideration, and if there is a person that's present, perhaps they could answer your questions dealing with the technical parts of this HJR. So with that, I will stop, and I will try to answer any questions that you have.
Okay, thank you. Questions for Representative Morissette. Representative Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, when you define performance, my concern is, mm-hmm. is that, having sat on Ways and Means this time, is this doesn't mean much to me in terms of my frustration with how budgets are put together is that there's no plans behind them. They're just current service level mm-hmm. rolled up, and I'm just afraid that this would just be current service level rolled up with a story that says, if you give me this much money, I will achieve these end results, mm-hmm. versus, you know, answering a question that says, to achieve the results, how much money do you need, and, you know, and show me a plan behind it that demonstrates that that's the money that you need.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big difference in terms of, because my frustration, I sit down there and you ask an agency, why do you need this money? And they'll tell you that they need it to obtain, you know, to perform their mission mm-hmm. that they've been assigned. Then you say, well, then how did you come up with that number? And then they look at you, you know, with a blank stare because, you know, they had to do the budget a year before, you know, they're sitting there, and it was a guess then, and they have to come in and support the budget, you know, even though it was not based upon any facts. You know, they're just melding it together, and they, you know, cooked up a good story today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, that's my frustration.
Yeah. Do you sit on that committee with Senator Yee? Is this a joint committee?
Yes.
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Senator Yee is on that committee, and Senator Yee asked those questions. I mean, she asked the questions of how do you measure what you're doing, what do you base your information on, and so on. And I asked her to be here today. I don't know if she will be here. She's interested in it. And I think that frustration is the basis of considering something like this, because you don't know until the second time around. That's when you find out if they have met their goals. You know, when this bill is implemented, they will, in fact, this is kind of late in the session. I hope it would have time to take effect. But after they propose a budget under the directions of this bill, then they would have to, when it, demonstrate that they've met those measures the next time they come for their budget. And so it would take a couple of sessions before this to become understandable, to be internalized by the agencies. This is not something the agencies want to do. This kind of strikes fear into their heart. It can be done, but it's going to be uncomfortable. It's one step beyond. It's beyond paying lip service to performance-based budgeting. And that's why we are, I would like to do a pilot project with some agencies, and I think I've been told that the state police is an agency that does a pretty good job in stating performance goals and achieving what they say they want to do. The state of Florida has done this, and so there are, and in meeting with John Latimer, Teresa McCune, Jeff Triant, they all feel that this is something that is a goal of theirs. Now, they are not going to be here to advocate for this because but they would certainly answer your questions, and they have been supportive of this concept. I asked Teresa if she was familiar with the state of Florida, and she said, yes, I've been there. I know what they're doing. That larger handout they gave you is based on some of the things that are going on in Florida. So I just think that for a state that has the benchmarks, which basically go across the agency lines, that they're not, the benchmarks are not concentrated on performance measures, but they certainly are tied to them. And for a state that's known for benchmarks, that says they have performance-based budgeting, I think it's something that we need to pursue.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Cruz?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, Representative, I think it's appropriate that you bring a government accountability bill. I'm wearing a Rush Limbaugh tie.
Oh.
But
a gift. My Jerry Garcia ties are all.
This is a Garcia, so.
Oh.
Role reversal.
I guess I have some of the same concerns, Representative Hill. It's kind of a chicken and egg thing here to agree to a degree. I mean, I don't see what's in here that prevents baseline from just being CSL, and I'm wondering if we need more definition as to what we're really as to the level of accountabilities that we're looking for here. I mean, I would think if we take this to the degree that we should take it, as far as trying to do performance base, it would be zero base and have them justify every expenditure from ground zero. And I guess I'm not sure if you are anticipating getting to that sort of a level here or not, because I'm not sure that this would do that.
No, that is not. I don't think the goal of this bill is to go to zero base, although I understand you do have a zero base bill before you. I think it's just to go beyond where we are right now and to be more, to not put agency activities down as goals and to be able to measure what is. Now, on page 11 of this larger handout that I gave you, they talk about, and this is an interesting example, agencies should develop unit cost information for key outcomes. And it uses the example of the cost of providing services for the elderly as an example. Concerning with nursing homes, and I am sorry that I didn't get this to you before, because I think this would answer a lot of your questions. But again, if you have other technical questions, we do have someone here that could respond to them.
Just one more follow-up.
Yes, Representative Cruz.
I fully support where you're trying to go. I guess I just, there are a lot of concerns with kind of being trapped in the same box, because if you're going to unit costing, aren't we still just doing categorical funding rather than, I mean, doesn't that trap us into that rather than true outcome based?
Well, I think unit costs would identify, okay, unit costs could go down as well as going up, and I think that, and if you're going to want to justify an increase in the budget, you have to have a basis for justification, and unit cost, and to identify unit cost would be a way of doing it. For instance, in the social services, as we have additional aging seniors, we have additional unit costs. That puts a focus on individual care. I mean, I think it personalizes that budget item rather than simply, you know, what is the unit cost? That would be an interesting thing to question the agency about. What is the cost of care for nursing home or assisted living? And I think that would be very useful in developing the budget. And it would force the agency to go into greater detail, to do the counts, to be more focused on the numbers of individual services, individuals who need the services. So I think that would be helpful in determining a budget. And I think it could be done for such difficult things as social services. Now, the state police have a less personalized system in terms of their job, where it's more difficult to quantify and qualify the social services. That's much more subjective, but I think that it certainly unit costs would be a way of doing that.
Okay, just one more follow-up, and it was kind of in the social service. I mean, if we're trying to move to models where we've got dollars following people, and we're getting a real cross-pollination of different agencies with that, it seems to me that may be problematic to, unless you're looking at unit cost as being quite simply those dollars from wherever that are serving that person, and that person is the unit you're looking at. But if you're looking at traditional unit cost, you know, slots and AFS, I mean, different things like that, and we're trying to have dollars follow people, that's going to be awfully hard to track, I would think.
Well, I think that performance-based budgeting lends itself more, it's more applicable to some departments than to others. You know, in some areas it's more difficult, but I still, you know, I feel that the social services, which are the most difficult, are the most generalized. If we're going to keep up with the needs of the people who are aging, we need to be more specific about the cost of the programs. And I think by using the unit cost, it would be more difficult to deny funding. I think it's easier to ignore, for instance, in this budget, the governor's budget for social services was cut drastically with no regard for the cost of, for the needs of those whose programs were cut. And I think once established, the focus will be on the true cost of care. And it's harder to ignore the needs when you focus on that. Right now, we blithely just ignore programs without any regard, to the cost. And it's easier to simply cut them in that with that. So I feel this would make it more difficult to cut programs, and certainly more difficult to justify increasing without the analysis of the costs. We don't have a handle on that. And I'm you're right, there are slots here and there, but and there's some cross-pollination, but you know, it would be harder to do, but I think we owe it to our constituents to make an effort to do that.
Okay. Representative Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Following up on comments that Representative Cruz made, it sort of, you know, I guess I never thought about that concern in terms of that. Does this sort of take us back out of the ability to sort of understand the the impact in terms of, or how the dollars are spent that achieve the goals. So in terms of, so we're sort of, we remove ourselves even farther from the budget because all we talk about is performance and outcomes. Rather than looking at gory details of how we, you know, how that all rolls up to the dollars. Because it's nice to sit up here and talk about, you know, let's talk about the outcomes of it. But for example, yesterday in Ways and Means, in the Department of Corrections, in their budget, they have a line item for telecommunications charges. And for the last three or four legislative sessions, biennials, that number has been under budgeted by about $600,000. It continues to be under budgeted for $600,000. And it's, you know, all these technical reasons. They've always tried to increase the number, but DAS has always rejected it. And so even though they spend over $1 million a year on telecommunications charges, it's only budgeted for $400,000. And so we've passed out that budget. So what that means is that even though everybody knows it costs more, as the line item's down, then they're forced to go out and find the dollars elsewhere in their budget on their rebalance to go back and backfill a figure. So they're out making choices on people. They're making choices elsewhere in terms of rather than sending and having a true discussion that we know what the sum costs are associated with delivering the service. And so I think in terms of those types of elements would be lost, I think, in a discussion up here. I'm just how in a budget that we don't lose sight of the detailed pieces. I think it's important to people to justify the components, because it's almost what becomes more important in a performance-based budget is the review after the fact, in terms of the second time around that becomes the most critical component of performance-based budgeting. Rather than the upfront, because that's easy to say, you know, go forth and, you know, do good works, you know, here's the money, you know, and it's on the backside in terms of how do you really measure that they're being the most efficient with those dollars if you're looking at a dollar that's up here versus if the subcomponents that add up to it. And, you know, I may be the wrong person, because you know, I like to look at the details that add up. To see if they're being efficient in terms of, because I think everybody can improve, and it's always good, I think, to have somebody on the outside coming in and saying, why are you performing it in this business practice? If you change this, you could achieve more dollars up here in the programming and cut administrative. And so I'm just afraid that if we go down and everything's performance-based, we lose sight of this, and we don't understand how much is being spent on program and how much is being spent on administration to sort of keep those things in check, so we don't spend too much here to achieve nice goals.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I'll follow procedure. Chair Crummel, Representative Hill. The second time around, I think, is the, as my former chair, Sincera, used to say, the proof of the pudding. The first time around, though, would be to identify what is going to be measured the second time around. And that's why I'm asking for a pilot project of three agencies that would spend some time defining what their measures will be, so the next time they come back for the budget, you can hold them accountable for what they said they were going to do. Now, I don't see this. I guess this thing could go sideways, or, you know, I don't want to make this teaching to the test kind of thing where you spend so much time looking at, you know, what you're going to accomplish that you miss the subtleties of what you're supposed to be doing. But I think that if this thing works the way it's supposed to, you will have some carefully thought out performance measures presented to the budget committee up front, and 2 years later they would come back to you and be accountable for what they said they were going to do. And once that got going over a period of time, it would be very workable. I think it would work. It would work better in some agencies than other agencies, and there would have to be adjustments made along the way. This is not a one-size-fits-all because some agencies would be more difficult. And at some point you might say, this, you know, we're not going to do performance-based budgeting across the board. We're going to do it where it makes the most sense. But without a pilot project, we'll never know. And we're not there. And so we do not do performance-based budgeting. We say we do, but we do not. And I think this is an opportunity to try it.
Representative March?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I come from a entity that has worked on performance-based budgeting, and I know it was not incompatible with zero-based budgeting. I mean, the idea of performance-based budgeting is that we will have outcomes that are measurable, and we can find whether a program's being efficient and effective based on their outcomes, and not based on how many people they serve. An agency may serve 50 people or 500 people, and we know a cost per unit, but we don't know if those 500 people were served well. And that's the performance-based, is what are the outcomes you want that agency to do? Is that...
Well, and thank you for that, because the cost per unit is part of it, but I feel it's really important to... that the services that are performed well, and that there is a measurement for that. There has to be a measurement for that, and that may, you know, and I guess that's part of the purpose of the Ombudsman. Their role is to deal with the complaints from people who feel that they are not being served well. And some of those things are difficult to measure. I had this discussion with a senator who didn't like performance-based budgeting when it comes to government. He says it's great for business, but in government you're dealing with human lives, and it's difficult to measure how well you deal with human lives. And so he didn't want to go this route. But I feel that's – I don't think it's incompatible with performing services well for human beings. I think that there are ways of measuring it, but it's not going to be easy. And as I said earlier, if you go to the agencies and ask them if they like this, they will probably tell you, no, we don't want to mess with this. It's going to cause all kinds of disruptions within the agency. So,
Representative Worth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Morris said, I noticed that the bill we're hearing next, House Bill 3890, is establishing a zero-based budgeting task force. And so I'm wondering why you chose a pilot program over a task force, and possibly if the two of these can be combined.
Chair, Representative Worth, I don't know. This bill, this is the bill that I introduced last time, and I thought it was going to go somewhere, and I'm disappointed that it didn't. I brought it back as it was. And I guess I wasn't paying attention to some of these other requests. I think we could do a task force. I would prefer to do the pilot project. I think a pilot project could be done fairly simply if we had, you know, picked the right agencies to do, and that would be a simpler thing than a task force. So,
thank you. Any other questions for Representative Morissette? Representative, thank you very much.
Thank you.
John, right? Darren, would you come on up? I'd like to have you just kind of. Did you have any testimony to give?
I'd be glad to answer questions if there are any.
Okay. Well, let me go ahead and see. I didn't know if you had testimony that you wanted to give with regards to this or not. Are there any questions for Darren from DAS?
Darren
from DAS. Representative Hill.
You know, I'd just like to know why the line item in corrections has never been increased, even though they know they're going to spend it. Forcing them to always rebalance something that they know is not going to be that way doesn't make any sense to me.
Darren, I don't know if you care to answer that here or if you'd rather wait until you're down at Ways and Means and he's the chair.
If you can get back to me, man.
I'd be glad to.
No more than 3 pages, please.
Okay. Any other questions for Darren? Well, thank you. Just go ahead and kind of stick around, though, so you can. Mary Botkin.
Here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, I'm Mary Botkin, representing AFSCME Council 75. And if you notice on the sign-up sheet, I didn't mark for, against, or neutral, because to be really honest with you,
just so you don't live 100 miles from here.
Yeah. No. And I don't live it. Yeah. I don't know who the agencies are. It's really hard for me to figure out whether or not we like this bill or not, or don't like the bill or not, because you don't know which agencies they're going to use. And unfortunately, the last time I checked, none of the agencies I represent make widgets. So I don't know how. We are not unilaterally opposed to this premise. We sat for a year and a half on the Jeffrey Tryon's go around the state, figure out what the benchmarks ought to look like task force. I sat on two of the subcommittees for the task force, one on public safety, one on juvenile corrections. You know, after a year and a half, we came out with a really nice report. And, you know, I was just amazed. I saw the update this year and found out that the Department of Corrections has gone from a failing grade to a B+ in 2 short years. I was just absolutely amazed. I don't know what they based it on, because when I read the report, I couldn't understand. There was nothing about adult corrections. There was some kind of mishmash about, you know, we were doing better with kids and fewer kids were carrying guns. You know, I'm not sure that I consider it a B+ that we've managed to get fewer kids to carry guns to school. You know, tell me we've gotten no kids to carry guns to school. Tell me we haven't had any shootings or any violence in the schools. I'll be impressed. But a B+ for fewer kids carrying guns in the classroom that doesn't equate to me. So I don't know what we do with it. And, you know, Representative Morissette is somebody that we like a lot, as you all know. And so, you know, we're pretty willing to go along with him on just about anything. And I think we're willing to try this out.
I see his head inflating back there.
You know,
please.
But I don't know which agencies we're going to use. And if we're going to use one of our agencies, then, you know, do we use the Department of Corrections? And how do we measure outcomes? Do we measure it on recidivism, violence in the institutions? Do, you know, or do we go to a different agency? Do we go to, you know, OLCC? Okay, well, that's probably pretty easy. We actually sell something there. So you could have some measurable outcome. It makes sense to me. You know, in my previous life, I worked in the private sector. I actually worked for a retail outlet. I get that part. I don't know how we measure human services. So somebody just explain it to me.
Okay. I'll be happy to do that at a later date.
Representative Hill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mary, would more of a zero-based approach in terms of I'm focused because we just had your guys' small...
I was there.
And I guess having someone go back, and maybe not every cycle to a zero base, but at some point go back and reassess and line everything up. I need 500 people. I can calculate out what my personnel costs for that 500 people are going to be. I mean, that should be pretty simple to go forward, and you could sort of realign these things and find sort of and reassess business processes along the way, which seems, I mean, I don't know how you, I mean, you're watching people in prison. It's, you know, I guess performance could be how many got away, how many didn't get away, you know what I mean? But, I mean,
how did they get away? Did they cut through the fence?
So I mean, I think, you know, I mean, I can sort of see what you're saying in terms of we got to be careful which agencies you can do. I think some of them you can say, I'm looking at some measures, you know, in terms of reductions in X, Y, and Z, but I don't know, you need to make sure that, you know, there's actually some congruence between, you know, the measurable, what you're measuring and what you're actually doing, not some other outside factors coming in and affecting it. You could have an atrocious program, spending the wrong dollars in the wrong place and still have the measures being affected by other factors, And so you're looking at it going, oh, you were a wild success, you know.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hill, I think, you know, I mean, you're kind of hitting on a little bit of what, you know, what our frustration is. And I just want to say kind of up front that I really sympathize with all of you as members of these two chambers, because I know from sitting in Ways and Means all these years that you have to ask the right question to get the answer, that you're not going to get any voluntary information, that you have to know which questions to ask, and if you don't ask it correctly, you're not going to get an answer that either tells you what you needed to know. And, you know, as the union that represents a lot of these folks, we're no better than you are at this. I mean, we try and figure out the right questions to give you to ask, and if we don't ask it in the right way, then we don't get the answer that we were looking for or that answered the question that we were asking. And so I do think that there is a challenge for all of you, and you mentioned the fact that, you know, the Department of Corrections knows it's going to have a lot of overtime, so it ought to budget for it, and if it doesn't budget for it, then they're back, and why don't they just tell us how much they need? Well, Representative Hill, when you figure that out, would you give me the answer? Because I'll publish it. And, you know, I mean, I do think it's very frustrating, and I feel like this bill is a little bit of that, is embodies some of that frustration of trying to figure out how to get to the real story kind of behind the folks who are sitting at the witness table talking to you. And, you know, my frustration is a little different than Representative Morissette's. I mean, I watch you all pass a budget. You pass a budget. It's a two-year budget. And I have an agency that ends up cutting programs mid-biennium without even coming back to you. And I don't know how they do that, but they do it. And they do it with impunity. And so, you know, I share your frustration, and if this will help us figure out a way to get there, I mean, maybe that would be the Truth in Budgeting Act.
Follow up?
I just wanted to know if Mary goes around saying that she really likes me and she didn't just do anything.
Yes. Yes. I was thinking that yesterday as I watched you struggling through the information highway at the Department of Corrections yesterday. You know, I finally had to leave because, you know, I know enough about...
It was just too entertaining.
Yeah, that was just too much.
Representative Tomei?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mary, it seems to me, as I've been listening to all this testimony, and we talked about this at the local level when I was the mayor, maybe Bill had talked about it in his city too, it's really tough to do this, and especially when it comes to human services. Do you think it might be easier, like with ODOT, because there you've got widgets, you can measure miles paved or that kind of
thing? Mr. Chair, Representative Tomei, I think we already did that with ODOT.
I think
we did that last session with ODOT.
Okay, that was my time.
Yeah. Am I misremembering?
No, you are correct. It's now in statute, and what we did was, I think it was House Bill 2978, if I'm not mistaken. I may have the number a little bit.
I think my colleague, Ralph Groner, I believe, worked on that very diligently with the leadership last session to get that bill.
That was the Loken bill.
Right. Yeah. Yes.
Oh, good. Okay.
Representative March?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mary, actually, I think you probably know what are the outcomes of a good corrections institution. I mean, if from your perspective, would, for example, a corrections institution where none of the employees were physically beaten or attacked, that would be a positive outcome from the employee standpoint. What other services are provided in the institutions? GED training, we have that. And so percentage of people who start GED training and complete it. I mean, there are some measures there that I think we could sit down and based on your knowledge and your people's knowledge, we could come up with a really good set of outcomes, of positive outcomes for the organization, of performance outcomes. And then, you know, we could, when they have a pro, you know, giving them money for outcomes. They can't cut that program midstream, or their outcomes are going to go down, and they're going to be in trouble. So, do you think it'd be possible to sit down and work on some of those?
Mr. Chair, Representative Marsh, I think that's, I mean, that's why I didn't say that we're opposed to the bill, because I don't think the bill is necessarily a negative. I think if we do it in a way, in a cooperative manner, where folks don't feel like they're being victimized by some performance base, but rather that they are being partnered with to find better ways to operate their agencies and to find some accountability in the budgeting process for those agencies, I think that our folks would participate. I know that we, organizationally, we would participate. And that's why I said, you know, I don't want it to sound like we're against the bill. I don't think we're, you know, unilaterally against the bill.
Mm-hmm.
We're just not sure how we do it. And if we do it exactly like you're talking about, I think that's okay. And I think that does help hold the agencies accountable, which really is a goal of our members as well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you talk to our members, they will tell you that one of their frustrations is not knowing when they go to work in the morning if they're going to get stabbed, and if they get stabbed, if anybody cares.
Right.
And, you know, I think that's a very big frustration. And so, I we're not necessarily opposed to this bill. It's just a matter of clarifying what it's going to do and how you're going to do it and what we can do to help make sure it works.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions for Mary? Mary, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr.
Appreciate
Chair.
Appreciate it. End of my list. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify on HJR 43? Seeing none, I'm going to close the public hearing on HJR 43. Members, just to kind of give you an idea of this, we have two other bills that I'm going to open the hearings concurrently. This is an issue that I think we can spend some time on and maybe get our hands around a little bit. I have done performance-based budgeting in a public agency, and that's in a city, we found it to be very successful. I think it is something that we can do at a state level. So with that, then I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3890 and HJR 60 concurrently, and I'm going to ask Representative Nelson to come forward. Please. Oh, and Matt, while she's doing that, why don't you give us a little rundown on these two bills real quick.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Joint Resolution 60 creates a joint interim committee to study and make recommendations about privatization of state services, and House Bill 3890 establishes zero-based budgeting task force. It specifies the membership and requires the Oregon Department of Administrative Services to staff the task force, and the bill takes effect 91 days following the adjournment sine die.
Okay, thank you. Representative Nelson, whenever you're ready.
Thank you very much. Chair Crummell and members of the committee, it's an honor to have this opportunity to appear before you today in testimony for House Bill 3890 that has now become, as you will see from the amendment to the House Joint Resolution 60 that you should be getting right now, it's now become House Joint Resolution 60-1. And I'll explain that a little later. So every time you see House Bill 3890 here, we've now become HJR 60.
So what you're suggesting, Representative, is that you would take what's in House Bill 3890 and move it into House Joint Resolution 60.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Go ahead. I was just going to say the arrangement is a little awkward in that the zero-based budgeting task force needed to be listed prior to the amendment as is listed here for House Joint Resolution 60-1, but it does the same thing. So in my testimony, instead of addressing HJR 60 first, I'll be addressing 3890, which is now combined with HJR 60. I'm State Representative Donna Nelson of District 29 from McMinnville, located in Yamhill County. This is the first time I've ever appeared at a public hearing before a committee, so I hope y'all will bear with me. On behalf of the citizens of Oregon, I thank you for your time and consideration of this very important issue. House Bill 3890, as was drawn up, establishes a zero-based budgeting task force that will establish the format and process for evaluating efficiency, effectiveness, economic factors, employee productivity, and excellence of select agencies of our state government on behalf of our citizenry with earnestness of purpose, and I just named that the 6E philosophy. As an advocate for our taxpayers and our wage earners, our children, our seniors, veterans, disabled, and disadvantaged, and our families, I feel responsible and accountable for their well-being. In fact, that was the theme of my campaign for state representative. What matters most is the well-being of our people. That's why management with measurement is essential as we participate as a team with our state agencies to secure the performance of critical services which the citizens have deemed essential for their present and future. For this reason, I'm presenting to you this House Bill 3890, which will provide a 12-person task force comprised of the people's elected officials, accountants, and industrial engineers to come together to develop the zero-based budgeting task force. As you have had the challenging job, very challenging job, of studying a vast variety of bills in your positions, you're cognizant of the difficulty of being able to focus on the full detail of the requirements and performance of our many commissions, agencies, and departments within our state government. It's my strong belief that with a task force concentrating on two differently sized organizations incrementally, we can best delineate the cost-effective excellence of the fulfillment of their missions. In my previous role as Senior Vice President of Administration and a member of the Board of Directors for a large corporation, I continuously was involved in the development and approval of the annual budgeting process for numerous subsidiaries and a holding company. It was a common desire of our managers to want to develop those budgets based on performance objectives and the previous year's accomplishments by using their current service levels as a base for their process and estimating customer and market requirements for operations for the impending year. In evaluating those budgets, I would consistently find that when the management of a subsidiary was challenged to fully account for the time, talent, and treasure to be expended in each unit of operation, that they were able to structure their budgets with greater economy, with the incentive of a reward for utilizing creativity, achieving greater efficiency, and reducing cost. I called it an actual factual contractual process. This zero-based budgeting process is an excellent complement to traditional budgeting, our current service level budgeting, which looks at what we spent in the last budget cycle and is incremental, but has the disadvantage of the base not being scrutinized, but the advantage of stability. Our outstanding Ways and Means Committee and Revenue Committee understand the fiscal complications of our system. When we combine our traditional system with performance-based budgeting, as you just mentioned, identifying goals to be achieved and consequences of goals not achieved, we become even more efficient. And then adding zero-based budgeting requires each agency or organization to justify its existence in all spending like starting anew or at ground zero. This mixture brings the best picture of fiscal accountability. And according to the National Conference of State Legislatures, most states are moving toward this mixture. The purpose of the Zero-Based Budgeting Task Force is to reevaluate and reexamine all programs and expenditures for each budgeting cycle by analyzing workload and efficiency measures to determine priorities or alternate levels of funding for each program or expenditure. Through this system, each program is justified in its entirety each time a new budget is developed. Zero-based budgeting employs four basic steps in its development, as you already know. identifying decision units, analyzing decision units and decision packages, ranking decision packages in priority order, and preparing the total budget requests with the approved decision packages. As you also know, identifying decision units is a determination of an organization's meaningful elements based on an agency structure and comprised of a program or a cost center. Decision packages are the main component of zero-based budgeting processes. Identifying the decision unit and describing its specific activities in order to evaluate the described activity against other activities competing for funding and deciding if the activity should be approved or disapproved. Key to zero-based budgeting is identifying and evaluating alternatives for each activity, stressing that as each agency prepares its budget, it considers alternative methods for performing the activity or providing a service and alternative levels of effort. As the agency determines best way performance, it considers various levels of effort and prepares a decision package for each level. This step thus leads to ranking decision packages, which will ultimately constitute the budget request for the agency. It is at this ranking process that some packages ranked at the lower levels may be disapproved. It is my recommendation that two agencies, one large, one small, participate in this exercise each biennium. This process is beneficial for both executive and legislative branches, as well as the health of the agency itself, whose purpose is to provide the most essential service at the best cost to its customers, the citizens of this great state of Oregon. Further, to meet the constant question of whether private enterprise can provide those same services in a more efficient, effective, and economical way, the Zero-Based Budgeting Task Force will have gathered detailed information to be used for adequate comparisons between government and private business service provisioning options, as was proposed in House Joint Resolution 60, which is now included with an amendment as House Joint Resolution 60-1. Efficiency, consisting of 7 members from the Senate and House, to study and make recommendations for the provision of state services The amendment creates a joint interim committee on government efficiency consisting of 7 members from the Senate and House to study and make recommendations for the provision of state services by private enterprise to the Legislative Assembly not later than January 31st, 2003. We owe it to our constituents to answer that question. We are all taxed with the responsibility to be sure that our purpose in a bureaucracy is not to simply grow bureaucracy. I am thankful for the professional men and women in our state government who genuinely care about our citizens and giving back to them the greatest possible return on their investment through dedication and cost-effective excellence. I'm also very thankful for you who committed your lives to public service and for your support of now House Joint Resolution 60-1 in the best interest of what matters most, which is the well-being of our people.
Thank you. Questions for Representative March?
Representative Nelson, you have two disparate ideas here. One, which I support, looking at zero-based budgeting. And then the second one is privatization issue, which is a very complex issue, and having performed an audit of a program that had been privatized and then brought back under government control and found that the government was performing it cheaper and more efficiently and effectively, I realize that privatization, you have to look at each one of those things in great detail. So what's the reason for combining these two different ideas?
Chair Crummell, Representative March, The purpose for combining the two was cost efficiency, in that the information that's gained through the zero-based budgeting task force could be used to compare, you know, the potential provisioning of private service for that, you know, same type of entity that we have just, you know, discussed in detail.
Follow-up? Follow-up, Representative March.
Thank you. Could not DAS use that same information that they gained from zero-based budgeting to decide whether it was more efficient to contract out rather than perform it by the government?
Chair Crummell and Representative Marsh, that's a very good question, and I certainly think that that's worth considering.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Tomei.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Nelson. I'm somewhat confused. On your first page, you suggest that we provide a 12-person task force, and I think on the last page, you're suggesting 7 members from the Senate and House to study. Are there two different task forces?
Chair Crummell and Representative Tomei, in the combination, yes, they are.
So there are two different tasks?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, can you explain for me what the two task forces would do?
Chair Crummell and Representative Tomei, the two task forces, the first task force would be charged, the 12-member, with the responsibility of studying and analyzing with an agency the concept of detail, zero-based budgeting from ground zero, and accumulating information. The second task force is a reduced force that would then take that information and evaluate private enterprise that may or may not offer that same service. So you would have two separate opinions.
So the first task force would give their information to the second task force.
Yes, ma'am. And Chair Crummell and Representative Tomei, yes, ma'am, you would. And you have two totally objective opinions.
Great.
That would be brought back to the Legislative Assembly.
Follow-up, Representative Tomei.
I'm curious why you suggested that industrial engineers be on the first task force.
Chair Crummell and Representative Tomei, in the business world, this is seen to be a system that has worked, and when we talk about efficiency of efforts, and I think that's greatly encompasses a lot of our work here in the state government, that having that skill in evaluating efficiency would be a good contribution to this committee.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Worth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Nelson, I'm concerned that by combining the two task force into one joint resolution, that we are somehow implying if we are supportive of one, we're therefore supportive of the other and vice versa. And you mentioned earlier that your primary reason for combining the two was for efficiency. And
Chair Crummell and Representative Worth, yes, ma'am, for cost efficiency, in that the first task force will have already gone through detail of these two agencies. And that information then would just be passed directly on to the next interim task force.
Follow-up, Representative Worth.
So I'm wondering exactly what efficiencies are to be found, since we're still having two task forces, from what I understand. And obviously we can use the information found by one task force, whether it be a year ago or 5 years ago, for a subsequent task force. But I'm wondering if you have any cost data on how much we'd actually be saving by making this move.
Mr. Chair and Representative Worth, I do not have cost data. It's primarily in the time that has been, you know, utilized of the 12 individuals who've been involved in the zero-based budgeting, and the task force then that would be looking at, you know, comparison to private business would not need to utilize that time.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Representative March.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just reviewing the the composition of the task force, and I would suggest an amendment if you were going to go ahead with this. CPAs are only one type of professional in the field. A certified management auditor is another, and certified internal auditor is a third. Both of those are good with management and internal programs, particularly related to government. So,
Chair Crummell and Reverend Marsh, thank you, and I certainly appreciate that.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions for Representative Nelson? Representative, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
I know you
for
have a committee meeting that you're working on, but we're going to continue to hear this bill, so
thank
you're
you.
Welcome to stay if you'd like. Mary Botkin.
I feel like I'm carrying the weight of the world on my shoulders this morning. None of my colleagues are in this room, and I'm going to...
Because I know you can handle it.
Yeah, that's right. For the record, I'm Mary Botkin, representing AFSCME Council 75. I don't even understand zero-based budgeting. Sorry. Don't understand it.
We'll teach you.
Okay. That'd be great. Because I really don't. I mean, I stepped back and kind of said, Peggy, can you explain this to me? And she said, yes. So, I mean, I'll go down to Ways and Means later and have him explain zero-based budgeting. So, having said that, I don't know where we are in this bill until I understand better what the premise, the whole premise of zero-based budgeting is. The task force, you know, we don't like task forces that say that the end result is to privatize state services. Okay? It's my job to protect the jobs of my members, you know, and they are public service folks, and we do think that government has a role in people's lives, and we think it's a pretty important role. If you're going to do a task force that says you're going to privatize all the services, then I guess we'll just be there in opposition to it. If you want to do a task force that talks about the kind of things that Representative Morissette was talking about in the other bill, where you're actually talking about how to provide services better, we're up for that task. And even if that task ends up costing jobs at some end, if we're doing a better job of providing services for the citizens of the state of Oregon, then we're all about that. I don't like privatization, and I'm not going to apologize for it. I don't think it does a very good job. Right now, you know, there's a lot of us in Portland who are very conflicted because as taxpayers, we paid for the dry dock in North Portland. Gave it to Cascade General, said, run it for us. And now Cascade General is going to sell it to some other foreign country. And I'm trying to figure out how that works, because that's privatization. We buy it, we give it to them, they sell it to somebody else. Do we get our money back? I mean, I want to understand why we start with the premise that government doesn't do a good job. I mean, let's start with the premise that government does a pretty good job, but they could do it better. And, you know, that's a positive debate that we're okay with.
Mary, do you think there's room in the debate even to just ask the question, are there services that would be better provided by the private sector, and if there are, would we be further ahead to actually do it? Because I think there's really two questions there that have to be, you know, when you start talking about privatization.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for those of you who have worked with me for any length of time, you know that I never walk away from the table. Even if we don't agree, I don't walk away from the table. We're always willing to have a discussion, and we're always willing to have an agreement that we're just not going to agree on some things. Mm-hmm. You know, do I think that the private sector can do some things better? probably not. But, you know, I'll make my best case. I mean, I don't, but I represent a set of agencies that I don't think do better in the private sector. And so it's tough for me. DEQ is not an agency that I think we should never turn the environment over to the private sector to self-manage. They didn't do it. They don't do a very good job of it. I think they do need police in that, you know, somebody policing that agent, you know, that area. I know that we don't all agree on that. But, you know, that's okay, too.
Mm-hmm. I'm just curious with regards to privatization, because I think one of the premises that we have to make sure that we get away from, if we're going to ask the questions, is number one, don't be afraid of the answers, but number two is that we don't go into it with the premise that we are going to do it, but rather that we are going to ask the questions.
And if you're going to ask the questions, we're going to be in the room, and we'll make the best answers. I mean, we'll argue our case, and I think that's okay too. I don't mind defending my agencies, as long as I am defending them on a level playing field, and that mm-hmm. and that you don't have all the aces, and I'm not going to get any.
Any other questions for Mary? Mary, thank you very much.
Thanks.
Is Randy? Randy Hildebrand? Where'd he go? He was here a minute ago. A couple minutes ago. Okay. Well, let's see. Is there anyone else that wants to testify on either House Bill 3890 or on HJR 60? Seeing none, then I'm going to close the public hearing on those two bills. I think that we have some food for thought here, members, and what I would like to do is... we will potentially bring these back, maybe in a little bit different form, maybe in some sort of looking at HB 43, HJR 43, and how they can all sort of fit together. Okay, let's see. Oh, would you call? Yeah, I'm going to do that while you call this devil. Okay? Okay, Chair requests unanimous consent to, we're going to have to fill some time here because we've got to wait for Representative Devlin to get here for H.R. 5. But I'm going to, Chair requests unanimous consent to return to work session on House Bill 2906 for the purpose of allowing Representative Kapori, Representative Tomei, and Representative Beck to vote on that. Is there any objection? Seeing none, work session is reopened on House Bill 2906. Representative Kapori, how do you vote?
Aye.
Kapori votes aye. Representative Tomei?
Aye.
Thank you. Representative Beck?
Aye.
Thank you. Let's see. We will, and having still passed House Bill 2906, having still the constitutionally required majority is declared passed.
Yes.
And so now I'll close the work session on 2906. And he's on his way down. Let's see, I'm going to open a hearing on H.R. 5, and Matt, while Representative Devlin is on his way down, maybe you could give us a little fill-in on this.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, you're probably a little bit more familiar with this bill than I am, but it's in memoriam to Robert D. Bigelow, publisher of the Lake Oswego Review and West Lynn Tiding.
Okay, thank you. That's it, huh? Let me just, while we're waiting for Representative Devlin, I'll just point out Bob Bigelow was the publisher of the Westland Tidings and Lake Oswego Review, and had held that position for a number of years. Last summer, he died suddenly of a heart attack. He's been a supporter of local government, state government, and was also very active in the community, and I think that this would be a nice thing for us to do in terms of a memoriam. With that, Representative Devlin, would you come forward, please? I was just kind of filling time until you got here. Thanks for coming down so quickly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee for hearing House Memorial 5. Let me explain one thing about memorials. I've been here three sessions. I've actually never sponsored a memorial before as a chief sponsor. I have signed on to a few. But in the case of Bob Bigelow, I wanted to actually do this memorial for a very clear reason. Many of you probably don't know the person that the memorial is for, but I think many of you in your own communities know of persons like like Mr. Bigelow. These are the people that within our communities really provide the civic infrastructure that work tirelessly to make the community a better place. And Bob was clearly one of those people. I just want to give you just sort of a brief history, and I won't try to take too much of your time. But Bob's was sort of a clear Oregon story, in a sense. He grew up in Hood River, graduated from Hood River High School, went to the University of Oregon, got a degree in journalism, started out as a sports editor for the Hood River News, and then went on as editor of the Newburgh Graphic. Then in about 1988, he came to the Lake Oswego, Tualatin, Tigard, Westland area, and he's had a profound impact on those communities for the final, what was, in effect, the last 12 years of his life. He was the managing editor of the Times newspapers, which is the predecessor of community newspapers. That's where he was hired originally in 1988, and then he became the publisher of the Lake Oswego Review and Westland Tidings in 1992. Bob was a tireless worker on a civic level. I was going to read to you a few quotes, but I think you've been provided with some of the newspaper clippings relative to his death. Just let me give you just a brief idea of what it was like in terms of to have Bob in the community. He was a member of the Lake Oswego School District Foundation Board, the board that actually goes out and raises funds for the school district to try to actually, in that particular case, to try to ensure that there are more teachers, because that's what the funds are exclusively used for, is to try to hire additional teachers. He was very active in the Lake Oswego Chamber of Commerce. He was not only a president and past president, but he was actually the president-elect again for the second time after an absence of being president prior to his untimely death in August of the year 2000. He was also a driving force in many of the community programs, including programs for youth in terms of drug awareness. He coached Little League for many years. He was also the president of the Rotary Club. There are so many areas of involvement. He was involved with the Lakewood Center, which is a performing arts center. He was designated Lake Oswego's first citizen in 1998. He is clearly one of those people that we all know within our communities that really makes our communities a better place to live. And although many of you probably did not know Bob Bigelow, I mean, I think Representative Hill may have ran into him from time to time, and I know that obviously the chair knew Bob pretty well. He's the type of person that, although, you know, he didn't rise to the level of being a U.S. senator or something, the type of person that deserves recognition. And I think all of us were particularly saddened by his early demise at the age of 42. And I'd like to tell you one thing that's particularly telling about that. Most of us didn't know, though it came out in the newspapers, that Mr. Bigelow had suffered a serious heart attack when he was 34 years old, and that he went on and still did all of these things, even against the advice of some people, of being so active. He went on to, you know, his very final days, knowing that basically each day might be his last. And so I sponsored this memorial along with the chair and along with Representative Williams, and I just hope to have your passage today.
Okay, thank you. Are you done?
Yes.
Okay, I wanted to make sure I wasn't cutting you off. Thank you, Representative. Is there any, are there any questions for Representative Devlin? Okay, thank you. There's no one else that wanted to testify on this, so I'm going to close the public hearing on House Resolution 5. I'm going to open a work session on House Resolution 5. Representative Smith?
I move House Resolution 5 to the floor with a due pass.
Representative Smith moves House Resolution 5 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? I would just say that I hope this will be unanimous. Thank you. Clerk will call the roll. House Resolution 5, having received the constitutionally required number of votes, is declared passed. And Representative Devlin, how about if you and I carry this together?
That'll be wonderful.
Okay. Representative Devlin and I will carry it together. Thank you. With that, I'll close the work session on House Resolution 5. And since there's nothing else before us, we will stand adjourned. Thank you.